We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning, and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. Last month, really just a short of a month ago, some new federal regulations went into effect that were designed to protect homeowners or renters against the dangers of lead. And they require that professional remodelers who work in older homes follow a very strict set of procedures if they're doing work over large areas where paint is disturbed. And we'll try to talk exactly about what that means. The EPA estimates that something like 87% of homes in this country that were built before 1940 have some lead-based paint in them. So this morning in this part of the show, we'll be trying to talk a little bit about these new rules, explain at least in some depth what they mean for homeowners who are hiring people to do work in their home, what it means for those people who are doing the work, and also what it means for individual homeowners. Maybe you're deciding you're going to do this yourself. Well, there may be some things that you might want to think about to minimize any sort of hazards to yourself and your family and the people who live in your general neighborhood. And here in the studio with me, I have Samantha Eit. She is the program director of the Hazardous Material Training Program in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois. She's background in engineering. She studied mechanical engineering at Clemson University and agricultural engineering here at the U of I. She manages all of the aspects of the HAZMAT program. She's involved in planning and developing and presenting programs and workshops. We also are scheduled to talk with, and I hope that we will, Sam Churchill, who is manager of the Illinois Lead Program in the Illinois Department of Public Health in Springfield. He's going to be joining us by telephone. He is the guy who deals with all of the questions, things that might just be day-to-day questions and also technical questions concerning lead. That is, questions that come into the Illinois Department of Public Health. So we hope that we can get him on the line. In the meantime, we'll talk here with Samantha Eit. And questions are welcome, too. And I know that she and we get Sam Churchill on the line here. We'll do their best to answer your questions. The new rules are pretty complicated. We can try and talk about what are in those rules, and if people have specific questions, again, we'll try to answer them. There is, however, certainly a lot of good information available if you go to the website of the EPA. They have a number of pamphlets. You can read what the rules say. So that's one place to go to get information. But certainly here on the program, I know the guests will do their best to answer the questions. Here in Champaign, Urbana, if you're going to call, the number to use is 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. We also have possibility of email if you'd like to send in your question that way. It's will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, Samantha Eit, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
We certainly appreciate it. Do we have some problem there? Try again. Say hello.
Thank you. Hello.
Okay. I'm not sure what that was about. Anyway, we're glad to have you here. You know, one of the things that I'm and I'm not sure if this is a question you can answer, but and we will talk in some detail about these new rules. But it's sort of my understanding that it was back in the early 90s that the EPA, that Congress said to the EPA, you need to develop some new rules about this. And it is the first, as far as I understand, it's the first federal regulations that have anything to do with home remodeling. Is that right?
I believe you're, as far as specifically with home remodeling, it is. I understand that this has been in development for quite a long time. That rule has actually been on the books for 2 years, and it just went into effect on April 22nd. And there's been kind of a rush because there's a lot of – I don't think the information was out there that people knew about it.
Well, that's what I'm thinking about. So the EPA worked on this for a long time, and then when the rules were actually developed, they kind of put them on the table in 2008 and said, okay,
right,
these are the rules. This is what it's going to be. You got 2 years to figure out how you're going to deal with this. And it seems that the first I saw about this was just right before they were going to go into effect. And I'm thinking, was the publicity about this or the information about this, did they not do a very good job of putting the word out that these things were out there?
I think a lot of it has to do with the people who watch the rules. A lot of the people who teach abatement courses, which we don't have a lot of groups here in the state of Illinois who teach abatement, realized that this rule was coming about. I actually, because I focus more on hazardous materials in the sense of teaching companies how to deal with hazardous materials, and I don't normally deal with contractors and the construction side of things. But I was alerted to it with a grant that I received recently with the weatherization under the ERA money that was supplied by President Obama. And so we focused on doing training related to this with the state of Illinois. But I think the big thing is that the people who needed to know about it weren't alerted to the fact that it was coming. A lot of regulatory people knew. And Mr. Churchill has spent quite a bit of time and money he had left over from, I believe, a grant, he said, over the past several months and going throughout the state and trying to advertise that this rule was coming about. And but there again, the information wasn't out there to the people who needed it. And realizing the people that we've been teaching in classes, a lot of them don't have email, don't have internet access. And so you're not, you know, some of them do. But I would say probably about a quarter of the people to half the people in our classes don't have that kind of access. And they would only be, I mean, a lot of them are alerted word to mouth, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fact is that we know that lead is a serious problem. It's a threat to health, particularly for children, but for anyone. Mm-hmm. And I think that in this country, we've certainly made an effort to try to eliminate lead. We've taken that out of gasoline. We took it out of paint back in the late 70s. That's why the sort of the benchmark figure for what they consider to be an older home in terms of the rule is 1978.
Correct.
And that's because 1977 was the year that the lead went out of the paint. So we're saying,
yeah,
okay, anything before that, we're considering that the possibility that there could be lead paint. I guess the question is, how are we doing? I mean, how do you think we've actually done in terms of trying to get at the possibility that people are going to be exposed to lead?
Prior to the rule?
Yeah, I mean, at this sort of within the last, I don't know, few years maybe, because lead poisoning, sort of my understanding that lead poisoning is actually still a pretty significant problem in this country, particularly for children.
Well, I think one of the things that I personally would like to address, first of all, I live in a house that was built in 1934. When we bought the house, obviously my husband and I were getting married shortly, and basically I remember when we were signing off on all the contracts, and they handed us this awareness that there might be lead-based paint. And I mean, at that point I worked in the safety field, but I wasn't teaching hazardous materials. But still, even after that, I had two children, and it wasn't until I took my lead classes and I'm the director of the hazardous material training program and didn't realize what kind of risk my children were at inside the house. And we actually performed a pretty extensive renovation on our house when my second child was born. So while I was on maternity leave, I was there exposing my child to lead. So I've had significant concerns and had her tested since I've been alerted to this. And her lead levels luckily are low, but, you know, she spends like a top sometimes and you wonder, you know. But there are significant risks to children. Children under the age of 6 are especially at risk. They haven't developed what is known as a blood-brain barrier. And so basically that blood-brain barrier for us adults keep us from absorbing some of the toxins that get put into our blood system. So they typically will absorb more, like 50% more of the lead toxin than we will. They're smaller than us adults. And so therefore, due to size, there's, you know, their poisoning is, it takes a whole lot less of the lead to poison them. And one of the examples they give in the EPA's PowerPoints, which we use those to teach, is that you take a couple of sweetener packets and you spread them across, and that's 1 gram of, you know, representative lead. You spread that across a football field, and you try to clean up, and that is actually beyond what the levels of lead in our paint are. That's an elevated exposure. And so basically what you have to do for that is just think about trying to clean up that amount of lead in that space. Mm-hmm. And you think about that in a smaller space, it's going to be really difficult.
So one, you know, it was, I think one of the things, and I'm sure that people felt would find this a little bit confusing, is that at one point there was a provision in the EPA rules that said if you're a homeowner and you have children but they're over six, what you can do is sign a waiver and say, it's okay, I don't care about this. Now, which it makes it that much more complicated is apparently the EPA decided they're going to do away with the waiver, so it doesn't matter. But I think that some people, when they heard that, they thought, well, what's sort of the magical thing that happens when kids turn six, so that we're concerned if they're under six, but if they're over six, we're going to waive the rule. So I suppose that explains it.
That would be the blood-brain barrier.
But I suppose, again, if anybody has heard that, there may be a tiny window here, but eventually EPA's that little, if you want to consider it a loophole in the rule, that's going away.
It is. Actually, I believe July 6th it officially goes away.
Okay. So I guess there's a possibility if you want to run right out right now and arrange to have your work done, you can get around that. But otherwise, pretty soon, it isn't going to matter whether you have children or not, whether they're over six or not. It's going to apply to
everybody. Think it's a relevant concern. I mean, obviously, homeowners are looking to try to keep their costs down. But I think if they were truly made aware of the risks that were involved, then they, you know, would be concerned about their grandchildren if they're older people, or about their own children and the risk, or even neighbors. Because, I mean, you know, there's liabilities involved. Mm-hmm. If it's like children outside your home that come to visit your home, so.
Yeah. So it, as far as the potential for exposure to lead, we've certainly heard some stories recently with concerns of lead paint on imported toys, for example. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a big concern because it's going to involve children. And there are other things, too. Here and there we find surprising kind of consumer products that end up having lead in them. But it sounds as if for most people, the potential for lead exposure, the main one, this is going to be it.
Yeah,
that is that there may be living in buildings or spend a lot of time in buildings where there is lead paint.
Yeah, and they might not even realize it. And just by the contractors being more careful when they work to try to avoid actually making the lead dust or contaminating the home by, you know, providing these containment barriers while they're working, it'll help solve some of the issues. And, I mean, it is a huge issue because you think about say that they believe that 50% of the kids in special education are in special education because of their exposures to lead. And those kids are more likely to be incarcerated. They've got central nervous system issues. They've got behavioral issues. They've got they can have growth issues, hyperactivities, reading difficulties. There's just a lot of things that can result from this, and you don't even know for sure if that's what's result of their exposure. And then there's another thing is if those children, because your body, if it has lead in it, can store that lead in your bones. And then as a female, when you become older and if you become pregnant and your body calls for calcium, sometimes your body will release that lead out of your bones, and then your unborn fetus is exposed in the same situation years later.
Yeah. Let me just very quickly introduce again our guest for this hour of Focus, Samantha Eid. She's the program director of the Hazardous Material Training Program in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois. She's involved with managing all aspects of their HAZMAT program. We were also scheduled to talk this morning with Sam Churchill from the Illinois Department of Public Health. He's the guy who's in charge of their lead program, and we haven't been able to hook up with him, and I don't know if we will. If we do, we'll get him into the program. If not, we'll continue to talk with Samantha. And of course, questions are welcome, and I know she'll do her best to give you an answer. Part of the reason that we're doing the program is to just talk about this new rule that has just gone into effect, went into effect on April 22nd, Earth Day. That's why they picked that day. And this is, this to be technical, this is the EPA's Lead Renovation, Repair, and Painting Rule. And this affects people who are going to be doing, professionals who are going to be doing renovation work in homes that were built before 1978. And I suppose the older the house is, maybe the more concern that you might have. And if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. You know, some, now that we've been talking about this, I'm sure that maybe some people, if they do live in older homes now, or if they haven't already been concerned, they're going to be concerned. If there is lead paint, lead-based paint in your house, but the paint is in good condition, or maybe it's even been painted over, and I expect that probably, you know, a lot of old homes, maybe they're somewhere there. If you dug down far enough, you'd find some lead paint. But if it's painted, been painted over and painted over and painted over, that should not be a problem.
No, it shouldn't. It, as long as the lead paint is intact, it's not an issue for the homeowner. You have there's particular areas where they call them friction surfaces, mm-hmm. which are stair treads and windows and doors, and they can create lead dust. But as long as, and it's actually not only just paint, but lacquers and stains as well that may contain lead in them. And but as long as the paint is intact, there's not an issue with exposure. And that issue comes into play is if they're pulling in, if you bring in a contractor to do some repair in an area, and they can test to see if that is lead mm-hmm. paint, utilizing these they're called lead check swabs, and they're actually produced by a company named Habrivit. And there's actually another company out there that makes another one. And that swab is good on paint as long as it's not red, and you can't use it on drywall or plaster.
Hmm. Okay.
But if a contractor utilizes that swab and finds that you don't have lead-based paint, then they don't have to proceed. They can just perform the operation as they would normally.
All right. And just one more question, and then we have a couple of callers here. Supposing that you live in an older home built before 1978, maybe you're not planning on doing any renovation or any work, but maybe just for your own peace of mind and for your own information, you might like to know. Do you think that it's a good idea for somebody who has a house like that to actually have some testing done to find out is there lead?
They can actually do the testing themselves. Yeah. They basically yeah. have to expose, like use a trim area and expose it down to the wood, and they can purchase a lead swab checks. I saw them at Home Depot here in Champaign recently. I don't know where else they might be available. But I imagine most of the hardware stores are trying to get them in, mm-hmm. and for contractors as well as homeowners. And they can go in and run this test. It tells you exactly how to run the test. It's about a 30-second test on the wood to see if it is lead-based paint. And you can check multiple spots. If there's different types of paint throughout your house, you might want to check different areas to see, if it comes up positive. Mm.
So it sounds like it's not very expensive. It's not very complicated. It's something that pretty much most people could be able to do for themselves.
Correct. And I actually saw one actually on discount at Walgreens for $3. And so I'm not really sure what they're selling them for at Home Depot right now. Mm-hmm. If you get them in mass quantity, like we're buying them for our classes, they're a little less expensive. I believe we were paying, a couple of dollars a piece for them.
Okay. Well, we have a couple of questions here, and we'd be welcoming others, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We'll start off here with somebody in Elburn. This is our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. I think this is a crock. I think it's a way to get money to pay for all the federal government spending. I'm a contractor, and it basically put me out of business. I don't have the money to go out and take these classes. I mean, I'm broke as it is. And what I laugh at is, and you're right, there's still paint that is sold out there with lead in it. There are still all the thing that's oil-based out there, like the varnishes and the lacquer, it's got lead in it. So I could go to a Home Depot, Lowe's, or Menards and pull out appliances that have lead joints in it. Unless you're going to completely stop the lead that we get from people outside of this country, I don't know how you're going to do this. You got more. I think you got more lead in some of the joints that are in the faucets that go in your sink than in the walls. The other thing is too, I've done the research on this, and I've talked to BFI, Browning Ferrous Industries. I've talked to Waste Management. I've talked to anybody that that deals with disposal, and they won't accept it. So I don't know what you expect contractors to do with this. I see a big influx of people throwing things out on some side road somewhere. Because technically, the guy told me if you get caught throwing that stuff in your garbage, you could get fined $100,000. So $100,000 versus $38,000 or whatever it is, I think that's going to be a far cry. Now, you know, you're putting the burden on the homeowners and the contractors. There are far worse things in the walls, in other places, in some of the insulation in these homes that are like 100-plus years old. Then, I mean, that's half my business. I don't know about any other contractor. I am presently trying to get a coalition together to fight this because I think it's insane. You're going to have to double the price on everything that you do on a person's house now because of it.
Okay, well, let's get some response here. Yes, the caller lays a number of things out, and I don't know what of that you can respond to because you didn't make the rule. So they have to take it up with the – you're going to have to take it up with the federal government.
I think one thing that you might want to do is the EPA has a website with frequently asked questions, and I think people need to keep writing to that website and let them know. First of all, if they have any questions regarding the regulations, and then they actually have 15 pages the last time I checked, which was a few days ago, of responses to different contractors. There's some practicality that needs to be added to the rule, and their biggest concern, I mean, I think it was a goodwill gesture on their part because of the exposures that are out there for children and the cost involved with schools. And I realize this, I mean, through our discussions with many of the contractors that have gone through our classes, I mean, the realistic amount of cost that's related to this is not in the rule. I think they estimate $6 to $200 per job. And I think if you start looking at time, it's going to, you know, I don't know what they have figured into that. It might be more. Certainly there are other exposures to lead that children come into contact with. I think they're just trying to eliminate one exposure mm-hmm. that is a huge one that they see because a lot of children under the age of 6 are moving about in houses. And where are they at? They're on floors. They're touching toys. They're getting some of this lead paint on their hands. Very easily can ingest it by putting their hands in their mouth or inhaling it when they're laying on the floor. So, I think they're just trying to, you know, trying to reduce some of the lead exposures that children are having, and mm-hmm. this is one component of it.
Mm-hmm. I guess this is something that as I read about it, a lot of contractors are really concerned that it will increase the cost of doing the work, and they want to make sure that their customers understand why that would be, mm-hmm. and that they, you know, appreciate the fact that first of all, you know, they have to follow the rules. It's not a matter of their choice, but that the idea is that it's supposed to protect people's
it is.
Health.
And I think, you know, if contractors have issues with it, they should, you know, voice their opinions. And keep an eye on what the EPA's next targets are. I mean, there's other issues that might be coming about that they want to, you know, watch because their comments, when they make these rules, they open them up for comment before they make the final rule. And they may change. They've already changed a little bit of the regulations on April 22nd. They came out with more, you know, they changed the opt-out clause, and there were several other things they addressed in that. Including the fine is not $32.5, it's actually $37.5. Mm-hmm. But I mean, voice your opinion. We have contractors' words in this, it's going to be more helpful to the way things are worded. And you know, certainly, I mean, this is your government, so.
Yeah. Well, I have some other callers here, and I hope the caller will forgive me for wanting to go on and get some other folks in here. Let me, again, introduce real quick our guest, Samantha Eit. She's the program director of the Hazardous Materials Training Program within the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois, where she manages all aspects of their HAZMAT program. And one of the things that you are doing is that you're doing the training because one of the provisions of the law is that people who do remodeling and contracting, they have to, there's training required and there's certification required. So that's one of the things that you're doing is that at your place there, you're doing this training.
Correct. And we were actually alerted to, actually my boss is Dr. Bob Bruno with the Labor Education Program within the School of Labor and Employment Relations. And he actually works regularly with a lot of labor unions. And they were actually asking for us to be qualified to teach this in case they needed it. And we have performed some training for some of the labor unions.
Mm-hmm. How many people have gone through your program so far? You have any idea?
I think for us specifically, because we actually are working through the Environmental Management Institute out of Indianapolis until our certifications are totally final within the state. And there's a huge process. Mm-hmm. And but we have trained approximately 300 people through our program, and EMI has trained people nationwide at over 5,000.
Okay. Well, we have some other callers. Let's talk with someone here in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I had a question, and you kind of spoke to that, about windows, where you open and close, and the paint around it, my inner window frame, it's all checkered, and it's chipping off in little square chunks.
Yeah.
And I'd like to get a kit to test it. But I just wonder, like, you know, some kits are some kits more reputable. I know you probably can't name a product name on the air.
Well, actually, it is. It's Hybrevit lead check swabs, and that's the primarily the one I use, and it's actually EPA approved. There is one other one, and I haven't checked into it since I had a meeting with the EPA when I was actually being certified, and they said there were some issues with the other one, but I haven't actually had one of those to utilize it.
Yeah, because as a chemistry teacher, I know that. I mean, if they don't have the right things in the kit, it's not going to give the right kind of reading.
Make sure when you use it, they have a confirmation circle in there that actually has a little bit of lead dust on it. And it obviously be careful when you're utilizing it or touching it. Wash your hands afterwards. But it'll actually tell you if the test is performing correctly, because we have had a few within our classes that have not, you know, not reacted, and then we tested them and they didn't react, and so they weren't accurate.
Right. So does the lead paint tend to flake off?
It does. They call it alligator,
right.
Kind of alligator skinning.
Yeah.
And so that kind of sounds like lead-based paint.
Yeah. No, I mean, my house was built in 1913.
Yeah. Well, just for a statistic is houses built between 1916 and 1978, they say 1 in 4. 1940 to 1959, they say about 69% of those have lead-based paint, and pre-1940, 87%.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Let's go on. And the next caller is in, Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling because we have a neighbor who has an outbuilding, which is on the verge of falling down, and it's literally right next to our garden.
Mm.
We can tell that it's covered with lead-based paint. We've spoken with him about this, and he's not inclined to do much about it at the moment. We're afraid that he might try to demolish this by himself
mm-hmm.
and spread lead paint from, you know, one point to through the whole neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if there's somebody that we can refer him to get information about either a contractor who's been trained, who knows how to take down a small outbuilding.
If you get on the
and collect the lead paint, or, you know, if there's information to help him know how to do that.
Actually, all the materials that we utilize in our classes are from the EPA, and they're actually on the EPA's website at www.epa.gov/lead. And so you can get on there and actually you can go under training providers and actually look at all the course materials. And it basically with it being exterior, the biggest thing that they look at is make sure that all the paint chips are cleaned up. And basically lead, because it's very heavy, and that's one of the reasons they use it in sinkers for fishing. The lead paint is going to fall to the ground very quickly. And so as long as you clean up the soil around there, it shouldn't be a huge issue, as long as, you know, can't speak to the amount of lead that might be absorbed by foods, but you know, as long as you clean up what you can see, you're probably going to be okay.
Now, is there a good place where we can go to get a soil testing done? Do you know?
I would contact your master gardeners, U of I master gardeners, and they should be able to tell you how to get your soil tested. I would imagine that the School of Ag would be able to address checking for lead in that, or your public health might be able to address that as well.
Thank you. This is great.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Thank you for the call. We'll continue and talk next with someone in Urbana in line two. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually sent a an email, I think, earlier. I'm a homeowner in Chicago, Hyde Park area, and it's an 1880s graystone. My daughter, after I think it was like 6 months checkup, I had a elevated level of lead. I think it was 10 or 11 micrograms. It was one over the limit. So it was pretty alarming. Then the health department came out and did their checks, and it was found that our sashes had lead-based paint, which was pretty common.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a contractor and do a lot of work on those older houses in Hyde Park. So I can feel, I sort of understand the gentleman contractor that called earlier, but I think he's a little bit exaggerated in his opinions sometimes. The lead-based worker, I ended up getting certified myself to do the work. It only cost $500, and I took it up in Chicago. I think it's a good program, but also I was pretty angry at first when, you know, they came in and basically they said, you will replace the windows. I'm certain that the level of lead that my daughter acquired was because of prior work I did in the house before she was born, you know.
Yeah.
The floors weren't sanded and redone, so there was a lot of plaster that was demoed. All that dust was down on the floor, you know. I mean, even if you, no matter how good you clean it, there's still going to be dust down in the
correct.
Cracks. So the day after the test came, you know, we were alerted. She was moved off site to my mother-in-law's house in the neighborhood, and that was lucky that we had that option. Also lucky that I had the option of getting the certification and doing the work myself. I mean, my windows cost about $8,000 just for the windows themselves. The installation would have been, you know, tens of thousands of dollars more, and the demo that you'd have to pay for the lead workers to come in would have been, you know, astronomical. I mean, these in the class, they tell you, oh, you're going to be making like $60 an hour when you get out. I mean, most of these guys were in a recovery program and, you know, they were being paid by a mission or something to take this class. I think there was two other contractors like myself that were in the class out of about 30. So it's very interesting that this is coming down. My question would be to you, after this, you know, I couldn't get any money. I mean, I'd made just over the limit for a grant. And when you call up a bank and you say, yes, my house has been found to have lead in it and I have to abate it. Oh, lead? No, we're not touching you. There's no way we're coming near you with a loan if you've got lead in there. So my question is there going to be any – I mean, the government has – they can really swiftly take out the pen and make a regulation, but they're a lot harder to make, you know, earmark some money to help out people that get in a situation like this and they can't – you know, they can't afford it. Luckily, my wife had some money in savings, and we were able to buy those windows, and I was able to do the work myself, as I said. But if we didn't have that – where would we have turned? And, you know, it's basically I would have gone to court if I refused to do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not experienced with as far as the situation where they actually actually find a lead a child with an elevated blood lead level, and but I understand that they are probably without the knowledge that you're a contractor, and they're trying. I understand when they're looking, they're trying to locate a source. I understand they go to daycares, they go that the kids. Been exposed at and try in anywhere they might have been exposed. So I feel for you and what you went through. I don't know what the loan situation is, I do know that we've had discussions in our classes even about what insurance is going to be like for contractors coming up. We're not really sure. At the current time, I don't think the insurance companies have realized that this is coming along, and I don't know what the differences there will be either. So,
let me just point out, I think it's, people are calling in about testing their house. Mm-hmm. I would caution them not to do that. Because, it could be that when you find it's there, you've got this, red hot potato that you have to handle. And you might not be able to sell your house as easily. There's always been a lead disclosure form. If you don't know, you don't know. If you do know, you either have to abate it or you have to disclose it. And you're not going to sell a house with a lead hazard in it. I would say it's much better to test the children. I mean, it wasn't a hazard so much to my wife and myself, but I'm glad that it was found out for my daughter. I mean, I was terrified, But also, from taking the course, the level has it's been cut in half. At one point, it was 20 micrograms per deciliter that was the limit, So mm-hmm. 21 would put you over.
Yeah.
So that's a lot more than 11 or 10. And that's what we've got now.
And so, I think testing has kind of revealed that the levels needed to be lower, that needed to be adjusted down. And I think I believe because your child was found with an elevated blood lead level that I think yours was looked at more as an abatement situation to reduce lead in your home, where these classes are actually the renovator classes are more just renovation and not designed to remove they're not designed to remove lead. They're just designed to teach contractors how to perform work more safely so they're not producing lead dust.
Okay. Right. Well, it sounds good. I mean, I think that's going to be helpful.
Right.
I mean, I learned all that in the abatement class, so I look at everything a little bit differently now.
Yeah.
I won't take any more of your time.
I appreciate your call.
We have just about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, or Focus 580 Focus. Our guest is Samantha Eit. She's the program director of the Hazardous Material Training Program in the School of Labor and Employment Relations here at the University of Illinois. And one of the things that she has been involved in is doing the training that is required now under these new rules. This is the EPA Lead Renovation, Repair, and Painting Rule that just went into effect, and it affects people who do renovation and remodeling in older homes, provided that a certain amount – we're dealing with a certain amount of space. And there are some qualifications where if it's a really little area, then you're exempt.
Correct.
From the rule. It's like –
Six square feet inside,
20 square feet outside. So if it's under that – The rule doesn't apply. If it's over that, and it's 6 square feet per room.
And it's only if there's a clause in that to where, and I'm pulling back through my notes to pull that up, but there's a clause in that where it, if you're doing demolition, window replacement, or some of the prohibited practices, which are power tools without HEPA attachment, open flame burning, or high heat removal of paint, then you're not allowed that. If you're still doing 6 square feet and you're doing any of those, then you're not allowed. You still have to do the lead-based paint.
So the idea is that they're really trying to make people sensitive to something like sanding, which is going to create dust, or using a heat gun, which I guess might volatilize
it does.
That stuff. So
then you'd
end up breathing it.
Yeah, and you wouldn't even know it because it would be in the air as a small vapor particle.
And so that makes it really – and it's – I guess, we're talking here about contractors, but for people who are thinking about doing this themselves
– they need to be concerned about their
children.
They
need to be concerned.
Need to be concerned about the dust that they collect on themselves at jobs anyway because they can bring that dust. You think about when somebody's sanding – the amount of dust that you get on yourself, and then if you don't shower before you hug your kids, then your kids are going to get a pretty healthy dose of lead exposure if it was in fact lead paint.
And for the contractors, and again, if people are interested in reading in detail, they can read the entire rule. There are pamphlets designed to provide information that are on the EPA website.
Correct.
But what's now required is that The area where they're working is supposed to be closed off.
Contained, yeah.
Contained.
If it's lead paint.
If it's lead paint. You're supposed to provide the person doing the work some way, easy way to get in and out of the house so they're not tracking dust throughout
Correct.
Your house. Yeah. They're supposed to wear protective gear. If they're using a power sander, it's got to have a HEPA filter.
Correct.
It can't just be broom clean at the end of the job.
You have to use a HEPA vac.
It's got to be very, you know, and again, I'm certainly sympathetic to people who are doing contracting because this is really complicated and they have to document that they followed the rules.
Correct.
And if they're found not to have followed the rules, we're talking about quite a serious fine here.
Correct. So and potential jail time and liability.
So it's
involved.
A real serious. I can
feel for him for the cost because I had to purchase most everything that they would utilize, you know, besides the power equipment to actually teach my classes. And it was a, you know, quite several trips to Menards and Lowe's and actually ordering some of the supplies from various vendors to send them into the U of I to.
Okay. And what's the for somebody who was going to take the training from you, what does it cost?
We're charging $259. And I think we're kind of – I've seen prices anywhere from like about $180 to I've heard that they go up to $800.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know that there have been some company-sponsored trainings that have gone on. And there's some contractors that are getting training, some labor unions that are putting out training to some of their members coming up. And so, you know, I just look around and we get lots of calls in our office. And we see a lot of contractors that are really concerned once they find out about this, about finding out what's going on. And basically, a lot of the questions I get prior to the course, I basically, you know, is what you're going to learn in the course.
Okay. One more caller here. We have somebody here on hold, Ann Urbana, and that's line one.
Hello?
Yes.
Well, it sounds like it's almost impossible to get your house painted. I have a house that was built in 1926, and it's been painted several times, and they always sand and scrape. It sounds like you can't sand and scrape anymore. How am I going to get my house painted again?
Well, if they're using tools with HEPA vacs, then they can do that. Basically, they can contain the area exterior, which obviously there's a cost involved. I'm not sure.
So when you say contain, it's kind of like you build a tent around
Correct.
That.
Correct. Kind of like you see.
Like you'd have to have like a plastic something on one whole side of the house.
Correct.
That you're scraping and painting.
Correct. And I mean, they might not have to put that containment up. They might they definitely have to put down plastic out from the house to catch the lead paint, because the lead paint will fall very quickly, as I talked to you, and it'll land on that, and then they can
on the ground.
Correct.
You have to put the plastic.
Correct. It would fall on the ground.
Yeah. Well, my house has been painted with primer and then oil-based primer, and then what's the other one? That's water-based paint.
Latex.
Latex. So does the primer have oil in it? Or, I mean, have lead in it?
I don't have a good answer for that.
I don't know. I thought it couldn't. I thought it couldn't have lead in it.
I don't know. The primer, sometimes they utilize lead in primers because it did hold better in the durability related to it. But I can't speak to not knowing exactly where that paint was, you know. They can test it very easily and see if it is. And basically, if one area is tested, then they'll know the whole outside of your house is fine. And when I said it would fall on the ground, I meant fall on the plastic, the protective sheeting on the ground.
Right, yeah. Well, oh, gosh, it just seems like another great big headache.
We just received for our house our contractor gave us some estimates for some changes to be done to our house, and as he gave them to me, it was early April, and I thought, you know, I bet he hasn't even addressed this because he mainly does new homes. So that'll be interesting to find that out before, you know.
Well, that must be one reason why you can't get oil-based paint anymore.
They're actually one of our teachers is actually a floor renovator. And he's actually spoken to some of the products that he prefers to use because of their durability and how they work. And they're actually banning some of those products even. And some of them aren't lead, you know, well, obviously they're not lead based, but.
Oh, boy.
But they're starting to ban more products and go into more water based products.
I don't think that water-based paint holds up as well as the oil-based paint.
Well, I think it sort of depends on what the application is, but if you know,
on the outside,
if you're gonna, and especially if you're gonna walk on it, that you know, if you're painting porches and decks and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the outside of the house.
Yeah.
Doesn't hold up. Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, other questions, we can answer them as best as we can. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, so now if you are thinking about hiring someone to do work at your house, and your house predates 1978, so it falls under the rule, what is the contractor, renovator, construction person, what are they supposed to tell you or show you? I mean, is there some sort of, for example, do they have to demonstrate to you that they are, that they have been certified?
You should definitely check that. You can check that yourself on the EPA's website. Hmm. And if they are, in fact, they basically, there's kind of two rules. You have to become a renovator. You have to have one renovator at least in every company. And there's information related to that because that person has to be at setup and cleanup and supervise the workers on the job. And so I don't know how many jobs it's realistic for one person to supervise, but they kind of have to make some of those decisions themselves and actually be
conscious
about it.
So within a particular company, at least one of the people who works for the company has to be certified.
Certified, and then, or they might – mean, there's been discussions about having, you know, somebody who is a renovator be that person for that company, kind of an, you know, an outsourcing.
And then it's the responsibility of that person to make sure their company –
correct.
Follows all the
rules.
Yeah,
and they're actually liable for it. They can lose their certification, and the company actually has to become a certified firm. And so that certified firm will be listed on the EPA's website. Hmm. And they're not allowed to advertise that they're doing work on pre-1978 houses if they haven't had this training. So, they've kind of hit all roles. I'm not even allowed to. I have certain rules the way I have to advertise until I have my clear certification to teach, but actually I'm working, you know, through the Environmental Management Institute until that certification is complete.
Okay. We have a couple more callers, kind of short on time. We'll see if we can get them both. Next, we'll go to Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yes. I'm a certified contractor. We got our certification a couple of months ago, and I wanted to address something that a caller from Chicago had said.
Mm-hmm.
What we were told during our training was, first of all, one thing we were told is that there currently is no lead test that for drywall or for plaster.
No, there's not. Abbreviate says they can use it on, but the EPA says that they don't. So
right.
I'm not.
So we were told that we had to always presume it. Because of that, we always had to make the presumption that any drywall or plaster that was disturbed was lead contaminated.
Now, actually, the correction of that would be if the paint on the trim is similar to the paint on the plaster or trim, then you could test the trim to determine whether it was lead-based paint or not.
Right, right. Okay. But the one thing that we were also told in our training was that we should ask a customer if they wanted us to test, but that oftentimes that the learning curve for homeowners was going to probably be pretty sharp, and that homeowners, with what the fellow said in Chicago, will start telling us, no, do not test. And if we can't test, and they would say the reason for that learning curve is that if you tell us not to test, you can always, when you sell your home, check that you do not know if there's lead present. But that if they tell us not to test, we have to presume it is and do all of the lead procedures without testing.
That's correct.
And I thought that kind of addresses what that fellow in Chicago was saying, because there is an issue with home values with this for people who are selling homes.
Yeah, and I don't know where this is going to go. I mean, as far as you know, insurance, home values, whether you have it tested or not. I mean, there may be people that are buying houses that insist that the house be tested for lead, just like you check it for termites and other things. So I don't know where that's going to go.
Exactly. We could end up going with that. The woman in Urbana who called, the reason for there no longer being any oil-based paints is Illinois adopted a VOC law. and the oil-based paints pretty much went out because of the VOC issue.
Volatilized organic compounds?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's stuff that evaporates off the... That's why it smells so bad, right?
Yeah.
That's that new house smell.
Yeah. Okay.
But we adopted basically the same rules and regulations that California has in place. Illinois adopted those, and they went in effect last year. And so the only those paints that were still available were whatever were on the paint store shelves, but you can't buy them anymore in Illinois.
So what do you do for, forgive me for asking, but what do you do for these really like high traffic areas like a porch, for example? What do you put on that?
And you use a water-based paint.
And how long is that good for?
Yeah, well, it are you asking is how much is the duration of the life of the paint going down? Yes.
Yes.
Are you going to have to recoat more often?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. That's kind of what I was asking.
Yes.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call. Thanks
very
much.
You're welcome.
We're just about at the point where we have to finish, and I have one more caller, and I just don't think that we're going to have time to take that person. It sounds as if, you know, these rule no rules have just gone into effect. Hasn't even been a month.
Correct.
And a lot of people are going to have questions, and as you say, we're not really quite sure how this is going to
play out.
How it's going to play out.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, if people want to see the rules, if they want to see some of the pamphlets that have been developed for consumers to try to answer questions, probably the best place that they could go is to the website
of the
EPA, epa.gov.
And if you don't have internet access, then you can go to the library. You can actually contact the EPA. They will send you some of this information, or the Illinois Department of Public Health, which Mr. Churchill works with.
And if for people, particularly if people are in the building trades, if they have questions, can they call?
Yeah, I regularly take calls at 333-0640.
Okay. Well, at that, I think we're going to have to finish up our guest with the program this morning, Samantha Eich. She's the program director of the Hazardous Material Training Program. That's in the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
For being here.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's music heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring the exhibit Helen May Butler and Her Ladies, the New American Brass Band from the Smithsonian Institute. More information is at sousaarchives.org.
We're going to take a break. When we continue with Focus in the next hour, Celeste Quinn will be hosting the show, and she'll be talking with the author of a newly published biography of Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens. Right now, though, we'll break for an update on the markets and news.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Tom Testel and Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets. Kansas City July wheat is now trading at 487 and a quarter, down three quarters. September at 499 and a half, unchanged. July wheat at the Chicago Board of Trade, 472, up four and a quarter. September at 488 and three quarters, up three and a half. July corn, 355 and a quarter, down four and a half. September, 363, down five and a quarter. December, 372 and a half, down six. July soybeans, 938, down one and a half. August, 935 and a half, up one and three quarters. November, 903, down 10 and one half.